Welcome, everyone, to the Deep Dive. So glad you could join us. This week, we're really focusing in getting ready for our Connect group discussions.
Yeah, definitely. Kent's sermon on Sunday, Servant or Savage, the Way of Jesus. Wow, it gave us a lot to chew on.
It really did. Pretty challenging, maybe even a bit uncomfortable looking at how we approach, well, life, leadership, everything.
Mm-hmm.
So our goal today is just to kind of unpack that core tension he presented.
Right. Get those main ideas clear so we can all dive deeper in our groups. It was, like you said, maybe uncomfortable, but kind of a necessary discomfort, wasn't it?
I think so.
Ken really threw down the gauntlet, asking that question we probably all think sometimes, even if we don't say it out loud. You know, when you see someone getting ahead by, let's be honest, being kind of ruthless.
Yeah, cutting corners, looking out for themselves.
Exactly. And you think, why should I choose Jesus's way, the servanthood thing, when, frankly, the world's way, the savage approach, often seems to, well, work better?
He set that up so well, didn't he? Grounding it right away with that story about the family road trip to Kansas, was it?
Yeah, to Kansas. And how they were being, I love how he put it, cheapskates.
Huh. Making sandwiches out of the back of the car in the gas station parking lot. We've all been there, maybe.
Totally relatable. But then, right there in that ordinary moment, that's where the big challenge surfaced. His kid starts talking about these leadership lessons from school.
Oh, yeah, I remember that part. And the core message was basically,
we need to look out for number one, the survival of the fittest, almost.
And the kid's question back to Kent was just, it was a bit of a gut punch, wasn't it? But Dad, what if it works? What if looking out for number one actually works?
Oof. Yeah, that's not just some innocent kid question, is it? That's the reality we wrestle with as adults.
It really is. We see it all the time. The squeaky wheel gets the oil, right?
The person who demands, who pushes, who kind of acts like a savage, they often seem to grab the short-term wins, the promotion, the better deal, whatever.
So you have to acknowledge that. It's not entirely wrong, is it? That approach can seem to yield results.
In a worldly sense, absolutely. Money, position, influence. So Kent boiled it all down, didn't he? The sermon's core question became, why would I be a servant when being a savage seems to work so much better?
Okay, so let's dive into how Jesus answers that. Because Kent took us straight to, well, the heart of who Jesus is, Mark 10.45.
Right. That verse is just foundational. Jesus, who is, let's be clear, God himself, God who took on flesh.
God incarnate, yeah.
He says, even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many.
We really need to pause there, like Kent did. Think about how absolutely revolutionary that statement is.
Totally. I mean, think about ancient cultures. Roman gods, Greek gods.
Yeah.
What did they want?
Service, worship, yeah. Sacrifices. They demanded stuff.
Exactly. They were often portrayed as pretty arrogant, self-serving, maybe even cruel. They expected people to bow down. But Jesus, God, comes to earth not demanding service.
No crown, no conquering army demanding everyone fall in line.
He comes as a servant. It just turns everything we'd expect from a God completely upside down.
And what's so interesting, which Kent pointed out from the context in Mark 10, is that even his closest followers, the disciples, they just didn't get it at first.
Not at all. Right before Jesus says this, you have James and John coming to him, basically asking for the best seats in the house.
Yeah, can we sit at your right hand and your left hand when you come into your kingdom? They were still thinking in the old way.
Completely. They were thinking geographically, like politicians carving up territory. They figured Jesus was setting up a new earthly kingdom, you know, with borders on a map.
Like, you know, a president's authority stops at the border of another country. They thought Jesus's kingdom would be like that, a specific place.
Right. They wanted positions of power within that physical kingdom. But Jesus had to correct them.
He had to explain, no, my kingdom isn't about land or geography. It's about where God rules. It takes up residence in someone's heart.
So if we submit to Jesus, the kingdom of God is present right here, right now, in us.
Wherever we go, here at Harmony, at work, if Kent goes to China, like he said, the kingdom goes with him.
Exactly. So the disciples were chasing earthly position, but Jesus was trying to teach them about, well, a totally different kind of reality based on spiritual submission and servanthood.
Which leads right into that section, Kent, called the not-so-with-you life, where Jesus directly tackles their hunger for that kind of earthly power.
Yeah, he points to the rulers of the day, the Gentiles, and says, you know how they operate. They lord it over people. They exercise authority over them.
And we get that, don't we? We've all experienced that, maybe. The terrible boss, the leader who uses their position just to dominate or make life difficult.
That is the savage mindset, isn't it? Wanting control so you can push others down or make them serve your agenda. It's kind of baked into our human nature, that desire.
But Jesus just cuts right through it. Those four crucial words, not so with you.
Boom. Complete reversal. He says, okay, the world thinks greatness is measured by how many people serve you.
Right. The more underlings, the more important you are.
But Jesus says, no. If you want to be great in my kingdom, you have to be the servant. And if you want to be first, you have to be the slave of all.
And Kent really emphasized that word, slave. We can't just gloss over that. It's heavy. It's shocking.
It completely flips the script on greatness. It's totally upside down from the world's perspective.
So the world runs on might makes right.
Yeah.
Power lets you force things.
Mm-hmm.
The disciples wanted the position so they could have that kind of authority.
But Jesus teaches that true influence, true greatness in his kingdom isn't about getting the high position. It's about prostration.
Prostration. Literally getting low.
Yeah.
Getting on your face, humbling yourself as much as possible.
Yeah. And that story Kent shared from the missions trip, the Apache Reservation, that was such a stark illustration of what happens when position isn't paired with servanthood.
Well, that was sobering.
Yeah. The tribal council, because they had that ruling authority, they could apparently just decide to board up someone's house, someone who offended them maybe, and force them to move them to this awful area like a valley with no running water.
Just because they could. Because they had the power, the position.
It shows that scary side of wanting control, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Wanting position just so you can keep others down or push them around. That's the danger Jesus is warning against.
Okay, so if that's the danger of seeking position, that savage way, let's circle back to the main question. Why choose servanthood? Why endure that humility, that prostration, when being a savage, well, seems easier or more effective sometimes?
Right. And Ken acknowledged the simple answer is just because God said so, which is true.
But there's a deeper why, isn't there? A reason that connects to something much bigger.
There is. And it comes down to love and eternity. Kent tied it straight back to John 3.16, which Cheryl actually quoted during worship, remember?
Oh, yeah. For God so loved the world that he gave.
He gave. God served. God gave because he loved. Love is the motivation for true service.
And then there's the logic piece Kent broke down about the savage mindset. It only really makes sense if you believe one thing.
Right. If you're absolutely convinced that you are the only thing that matters and that this life right here, right now, is all there is. That when you die, that's it. Lights out.
Then being a savage is actually the logical choice, isn't it?
It is. If this is all there is, you should grab all the money, all the power, all the pleasure you can right now. Who cares about relationships if they just end when you die? Take what you can get.
But that whole logic falls apart if...
If this life isn't the end, if there's something more, if there's eternity...
Suddenly the whole equation changes.
Completely. Because if life continues after our last breath, then what actually lasts? What crosses that boundary from this life to the next?
Not money, not power.
No. Ken argued, really powerfully, I thought, that the only thing that's eternal, the only thing that lasts forever, is people. The person sitting next to you in church, your family, your neighbors... People are eternal.
Wow. So if that's true, then serving other people
is the only way we actually interact with eternity while we're here on earth. It's the only investment that has an eternal payoff.
So it's not just being nice. If you believe in eternity, servanthood is the only truly rational way to live.
Exactly. And those funeral stories Kent told just drove that point home, didn't they? The contrast was so clear.
Yeah, first the savage ending. That older lady back in Kansas had money, had influence.
But used it to manipulate her own family, playing favorites with the kids and grandkids just to keep them under her thumb.
And how did her life end? Kim said it was just loveless. Her own son asked Kent not to say she was a good person at the funeral.
Mm.
How incredibly sad is that?
Just tragic. But then you contrast that with the servant ending is Grandpa Wagner.
Right. Not rich, not powerful by the world's standards.
But secretly, quietly, just giving his life away. Buying coats for poor kids in the winter with money he could have spent on himself. Things his own family didn't even fully know about.
Until he died, and Ken said the whole town turned out. Because they knew. They had experienced his quiet servanthood.
One life ends in isolation and a manipulation. The other ends surrounded by love and making an eternal difference. The choice seems pretty clear when you see it laid out like that.
It really does. So when we look around our church here at Harmony, Kent challenged us to rethink where we see greatness.
Yeah, it's not just about who's up front on the stage, is it?
No. He pointed out the real greatness is often hidden. It's in the servants.
He mentioned Laura Branca in children's ministry, giving her time week after week. Rhonda, or Debbie, running the slides on Propresenter so worship flows smoothly.
Josh Atkins leading the coffee team, making sure we all feel welcome. The volunteers in the nursery holding babies, loving on kids, so parents can actually focus on God for an hour.
That's where the kingdom greatness is often found, in those acts of service.
It's a living picture of Jesus, isn't it? I mean, think about what Jesus did the night before he was crucified, his last night.
Right. He wasn't trying to secure his legacy or, you know, throw a big party.
No, he got down on his hands and knees.
Yeah.
And washed his friend's dirty feet. The ultimate act of prostration. Of servanthood.
That's the model. That's the call for us. To live that not so with you kind of life. To be so filled with God's love that we're willing to become servants, even slaves, for the sake of others.
And final image Kent gave us, shining the shoe with the brush.
Yeah, such a practical physical picture of being willing to humble ourselves, to get low, to fall on our faces before Jesus, and serve others.
Because ultimately, Kent said, what's going to change the world isn't going to be more viral videos or clever marketing.
No, it's Christians living so differently, so full of love, that we're willing to actually serve the people around us unconditionally.
So the choice is stark, isn't it? Are we chasing position like the savage, or are we choosing prostration like the servant?
Knowing that true greatness, the kind that lasts, the only real reward, is found in serving others out of that deep, eternal love God gives us.
Okay, so as we all head into our Connect groups this week, maybe this is the question to really wrestle with.
Yeah, let's make it practical. If Jesus calls us to be slaves of all, servants of all, where in your life right now, maybe at work, maybe in your family dynamics, maybe even right here within our church community, where are you holding on to some kind of power or position that Jesus might be asking you to lay down?
That's uncomfortable.
It is, but yeah. Maybe ask yourself, what's one tangible, maybe even uncomfortable act of prostration of choosing servanthood over status that you can commit to this week? Something that really challenges that default desire to be number one.